Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 17th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a lovely Sunday evening is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Is it a lovely Sunday evening? It was raining. Was it raining in Tokyo at all today?
No, it was not. It was nice.
Ooh, it was raining in Hiroshima. Well, it wasn't raining much, but it was raining enough. It was really pouring at the airport when I left, so...
Nope. Great weather out here and a great day for baseball. Great game we had in the Pacific League. And you went to Hiroshima and got to watch the Carp finish off the Bay Stars there. I know that you weren't there at the beginning of the series, but you got there in time to get some good stuff for us. So on the show this week, we've got a little bit of talk from Alex Ramirez, the skipper of the Yokohama Bay Stars, and we're going to talk about the second round of the CLCS and the PLCS. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, as John cued you in, I did go to Mazda Stadium on Friday, and I caught the final two games of the Central League Climax Series Final Stage. How's that for a mouthful? And I did get a chance to talk to Alex Ramirez after games 3 and 4.
Excellent.
And the first question you're going to hear him asked was, now, in games 1 and 2, the Bay Stars were shut out. And so somebody asked him, what was bigger in winning game 3, scoring runs or shutting out the Carp? So you'll find out what Alex thinks about that. So, and then there's no break, but he cuts right into, you can tell when he's talking about the game they didn't win.
Right.
So, but that was a weird game. The game 3 wasn't all that exciting. It was pretty much one way. Well, it was a pitcher's duel, I should say, for 5 innings.
Part of the way, yeah.
And then game 4 was basically the Bay Stars were trying to catch up after a 6-run Carp first inning, which they caught up and fought quite well. So
yes, they did.
You'll hear what Alex Ramirez had to say about his last game of the season. So let's take it away, Alex.
Oh, score, of course. If we don't score, we can't win, you know. Of course, you know, tremendous job today. Unbelievable.
You know, you took me as a cow, but you know, whoa.
That was a big decision for me today to be able to take Miyazaki out of the lineup. You know, I mean, he's been our fifth hitter, you know, for a while. He got us to this point. You know, I thought about it for a long time, a couple hours, you know. But it paid off. It paid off. You know, Alien came through and, you know, I mean, that was it.
You know, you always mentioned that, you know, you put value on the numbers, but looking at Alien's number against Hiroshima Stadium and looking at his number against Kuroda is not good. So what was the reason you made him?
Well, believe me, that's why it took a couple hours for me to, you know, to put him in the lineup, because I'm aware of all of those things. But, you know, Kuroda, you know, today was pitching, so I had a feeling he's going to throw inside. After his first at-bat, I told Elian, look for the inside pitch and don't try to go the other way, just pull it. He did exactly, you know, what I advised him, and that was it.
You showed what a, you know, fighting spirit. So.
You know, that's the reason why he's in the game. You know, I mean, I thought about, you know, even asking when he came back inside the inning before, I asked him, can you go back, you know, one more inning? He said, yes, I can go. I said, okay, no problem. He saved the game for us right there.
You know, Suda just came back, but you put him in the mound with a high-pressure situation.
Well, you know, we know what Suda can do, and we know they're under pressure. I mean, he's been our guy. You know, he did a tremendous job there by getting, you know, that out. And, you know, that was a huge out for us, so tremendous job.
You know, everybody, you know, fought throughout the game, and, you know, Ishikawa crashed the fence, and Taji crashed, and everybody... You know, was so hassle to get today's win.
I think that everybody's today, especially today, we fought. You know, until the end, the guys are doing a tremendous job. You know, we played to win today. I mean, we showed it today. I mean, it's unbelievable to see those guys diving like that and making those plays. So I'm very happy that the team is coming through.
How's it show as
As what I understand, that you know, they're okay, but you know, we got to wait until tomorrow.
Again, if you can explain the reason why you use Kaji for the fifth.
I mean, like I said, I mean, if I'm gonna use somebody, you know, to his second, you know, Ichikawa will be that guy. You know, he can bunt, he can do so many things. I need somebody that can protect Tsutsugo. Since I moved Miyazaki, you know, Kajitani is the best guy. I mean, he can through today, you know, with that RBI, it was huge. So that's the purpose of using him there.
So what's it going to take to get Kajitani out of the game? This guy's indestructible.
You know, I mean, it's going to take a lot. I mean, like I said, I asked him, you know, what's your condition? Can you go back? Yes, I can go back. You know, I want to stay in the game. You know, unless he asks me, take me out. At that point, I'm going to have to take him out. But other than that, he's going to stay in the game.
When did you decide the lineup?
I decided the lineup last night. I would say maybe about 2 in the morning.
You know, guys weren't able to produce last 2 games, but the you know today we produced, so do you think our momentum is going to come?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're taking it day by day. You know, by winning today means, you know, we're good enough to win in the final game, in the final series, at least 1 game. So that means if we won today, we can do it again. You know, I think that, you know, if we're going to lose, I mean, this is a way to lose. You know? I mean, we fought until the end. It was just that we just came out short. I mean, that 6 runs in the first inning, that was tough for us.
You know, we came to the final stage, and, you know, if you can look back and then, you know, if you can talk, you know, about the whole season.
Yeah, I think, you know, we did a tremendous job this year. You know, not too many people expected us to be at this level. I mean, but, you know, we got here. We worked hard. We never gave up. You know, some guys are getting better. And I think that, you know, experience like this, it can only get us better, you know. You know, looking at our team and looking at all the Central League teams, you know, I strongly believe that, you know, with a little bit more of help, I strongly believe that we can be an A-class team for, you know, for many years. So, you know, we just got to continue working.
How did you close the meeting to the, you know, with the players?
Oh, I told the players that, you know, and I said this right from the beginning, you know, back in May, you know, we walked through the main door. You know, I don't want anybody to walk through the back, and that's how we're working now. You know, nothing to be ashamed of. We got to go through the main door. You know, we did a tremendous job, and we got to keep our head up.
What could a player learn while playing in a climax series? You know, playing the final.
Well, it's a totally different pressure. You know, here. You know, and now this is the first time that this team has been in the climax. You know, now they have a taste of now they know, you know, what it is to be in the climax. So, you know, they feel that, well, you know, I learned from this and next time will be better. You know, I mean, those are more mentally than anything. So, I mean, it was a great opportunity. And I think the guys did a tremendous job.
So in this series, did you feel there's some gap between you and the Carp? I mean, that you saw in the season, how did that play out in this series?
Well, I mean, you know, everything. I mean, the support from the fans, that was one thing. I mean, you know, coming into the game, you know, one thing that, of course, if you look at the starting pitchers, you know, it was going to be a little bit tough. Johnson was 8-1, you know, at this stadium. Or 8-2 in this stadium. Nomura was 8-1. You know, Kuroda was still having a good season. 8-1 in this stadium, and then today Okada 3-0. I mean, you know, thinking about those things, we're thinking, man, this is gonna be tough. It's not gonna be easy. But you know, of course, the guys did a tremendous job. Hey, 1 year, man. I wanna say thank you, man. 1 year, you guys did a tremendous job.
And,
you know, I mean, we worked together as a team, and you know, very learning process. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ramirez, again. Much appreciated. Much. I want to thank you for all your time and thoughts and, you know, sharing your different views on the game, as always. You've been doing that now for 15 years in Japan, so...
And a lot of it with you.
I never get tired of it. Yeah. So keep it coming, man.
Yeah, thank you for getting that for us. I know it's just sticking the tape recorder in the scrum, but you have to be there and it's taking time. So we appreciate that. And thank you for the post-game stuff too. And that was really good after the series was over. That was fantastic stuff. So thank you to Jim Allen.
Wow, I'm honored. So what would you like to say about that, or what comes to mind?
Well, many things. Obviously, the Bay Stars knocked off the Giants in that finale of the first stage, and they advanced to the second stage. And there were so many things that stood out in this just a little bit of post-game chatter, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously after they finally won a game, they finally scored in game three, and this is game three on the field, of course,
right?
And sort of got back into the series per se.
Well, yeah, as opposed to being eliminated.
But you know, you hear those things, but there a lot of things stuck out. But I'm just going to focus on two really big things, and one of them is the taking of Toshiro Miyazaki out of the lineup, and how he explains to us here how much he had to pore over that decision, and he agonized over it. And I remember talking to our listeners earlier this season saying, look, these guys are not chess pieces. Each time you make a move with a guy, you're sending him a message, you're sending the team a message. And you can tell, I really bet that if Ramichan didn't have to discuss this with the media,
mm-hmm.
it might have been a quicker decision for him, because a lot of times these guys have to figure out what is the message going to be? What's the narrative going to be to the media as well? And, you know, if they could, they just make all the moves they want. I mean, I'm just saying this, of course. I'm thinking he has to figure out what he's going to say to the media, and that's part of the agonizing. I'm not saying it's part of the decision per se, but it's part of the agonizing.
Could be, but I get the impression that there are a lot of managers who don't have a clue when the media asks them. Yeah, what are you asking that for? I don't know. or more, they'll just give a, you know, just make up an answer on the fly because they never really gave it much thought in the first place.
That, or they've got these pat answers and pat phrases. And,
yes.
And they just throw one out. They just pull one off the shelf and throw it at the media, so you go away. So I agree with that. So he said 2 hours that he was, you know, trying to figure out.
Yeah, for him,
decision.
that's an eternity.
Yeah, to me, you know, for a guy to spend that much time thinking about it. But, you know, the decision, I think, was already made in his head. I think he was just trying to figure out how to get the message to the player and the team. Because, look, you're in the...
When you listen to his talking to the media, it's really informative because, first of all, it is informative.
Right.
He doesn't give pat answers.
Right.
And the Bay Stars reporters at first, you know, they'll say, how come you tied your shoelaces this way? And he'd tell them why, and they're like going, wow, we got a real answer.
Right.
I mean...
Right.
And that's really the tone. Why did you do this strange thing? And he would actually explain it to them. And they weren't used to that. They're used to being talked down to. Now, and he would go through his thought processes on lots of things. And you could hear the question about Miyazaki or Elian Herrera was, you know, Herrera had hit poorly at Mazda Stadium and he hit poorly against Kuroda. So why do you want him? He says, do you know this? And the reporter said, we know you know this, so why'd you use him? And he said, yeah, well, that's why it was a long decision, because he had done poorly in those circumstances. So
and those
I believe that
been
is
doing
true.
Well in that situation and being at home and everything. Yeah, he
well,
laid
Miyazaki,
out all the numbers.
The issue with Miyazaki wasn't that he had been doing well, although, you know, it turned out the next day it was like, yeah, take me out of the lineup, will you? I'll show you. And
he did hit some rockets, yeah.
Well, until then, he'd been getting hits, but he'd been basically getting jammed. You know, he was hitting jam shots. And so he had hits, but he wasn't hitting well. And that was part of the issue. All the Bay Stars, so I said, what is it? Miyazaki's got hits and he's out of the lineup? They said, nah, but he's not actually swinging the bat very well. He just got hits. So
yeah, and that's what I think, you know, is when you're in a playoff situation, especially what you talked about, these short series, you have to act fast as a manager. You can't sit around waiting for a guy and you know, if you think he's not having the at bats that you talked about in hitters meetings and you discussed, okay, this pitcher has done this to you all season long, let's expect this, let's attack this way, and you're not doing it, or you're not doing it to the best of your ability, you have to get out there and make something happen. And I'm, you know, obviously I applaud him for the move, and it paid off on that night. But you know, he, again, just like I was saying, we'll get to it in a second, in that last game against the Giants, and they went into extra innings in that game on Monday a week ago, he can't get out there and do it himself. You know, the players are going to have to come through at some point.
I did ask him after game three, if, you know, do you sometimes feel like you want to get a bat? Maybe I asked him that at Tokyo. Excuse me. I think I asked him that at Tokyo Dome. And, you know, after game three.
Yeah, the way you said get a bat, it sounded like and beat your players.
But... No. I said sometimes.
I know you're going to say get a
and
hit.
And he was
but...
saying, you know, you can tell them this and you can tell them that, but they gotta execute. I said, do you sometimes want to get a bat? And he said, yeah. I had a couple of times when I said, man, can I hit? Can I hit for this guy?
Put me in, coach. Oh, wait a second. I am the coach.
I think, that was after game three when he talked about how much more difficult it is to manage than it is to play.
Right. And then the other thing that I wanted to bring up, because a lot of stuff I wanted to bring up, but in the interest of time, we will keep moving. And so this is the last thing I wanted to talk about. And that was at the end of what I edited, because obviously you sent me some stuff. I edited, and I did this last week, and I didn't say anything. I edited all the Japanese questions and all that portions out, and the answers and all that stuff. So you just hear rapid fire Rami-chan in this discussion. But at the end, when he says everything is over and he takes the time to thank the reporters, the same guys who second guesses every move, the guys who antagonize him for the decisions he makes, and sometimes they offer praise, but they're the same writers and reporters who give him extra stress over these decisions. But here he is at the end of this, you know, a tough loss, a tough way to go out, the season's over, and he takes the time to thank all the reporters. And you know, again, he has to figure out how to manage the billions of questions, many of them that are ridiculous and asinine throughout the entire season. Yet he's thanking these people for doing their job.
Well,
it's just so beautiful.
It is indeed. And again, this goes back to the bit about one of the things he told me on several occasions was that a big part of his job was basically preparing and making sure the manager's job is to basically make sure the players are ready to play.
Right.
Now that's the coach's job, but he's got to make sure the coaches and he are on the same page and the coaches are doing things the way he wants them.
Right.
And so on and so forth and on down the line.
Coaches, yes.
Right. And we had a conversation in which he talked about coaching in Japan. He said a manager's job is really easy. Basically, if you're a manager in Japan, the batting coach gives you the lineup, the batting order and the lineup. Yes. The pitching coach tells you who's ready to pitch and when they're ready to pitch. And you just say, okay.
I don't think I'd run my ship that way, but all right.
Well, no, but I'm saying that this is very much the way that, you know, basically the head coach checks it and hands it to the manager and say, this is their suggestions. And the manager makes his decisions based on that. And he said, basically, you know, that's the way it works. And I think that's not so different from the way the Bay Stars work. But with the Bay Stars, he expects, and here's the difference. He said, when the coach gives him his suggestions, he's got to say, well, what's the reason for this? What's the rationale for this? And he said, the rationale can't be, I got a feeling. He said, that's not rationale. Choshi Gai is not rationale. You got to have a rationale. You got to have a reason for doing this stuff.
Not just because the player's hot.
Right.
Or he's
no,
he's
not because
good
he's hot. It's
you're
I
looking
like
good today.
This.
You look good in the bullpen.
Yeah, whatever. But no, he said, that's not an acceptable answer. So the co he on numerous occasions he had to send the coaches back to, back to get the redo their homework.
I like that.
And
I should do that to you.
Hashtag high heat.
you hear that silence, team? That's John Gibson, that's John Gibson's version of the strike zone.
Pitch
Okay,
right in the
now
head. Strike one.
that's so 2014. So anyway, to make the point short, eventually, they got on the same, they got into tune about what the order, they learned what he wanted to do, and he learned what how they wanted to do things, and they reached a happy medium. And with the reporters, one of the things he always did was say why. I was you're sh You listen to his stuff, and they'll say, why are you using this guy? And it's never, oh, I think he hits this team really well. It's, I like what he's done against these pitchers, and I like him in this situation working, in this situation because of this. There's always a reason. He's got a reason. He's got a reason. I can't say he's got a reason for everything, but it sure seems like it. He has, he puts some thought things that all managers don't.
Right, and like I said, at the end, he still takes the time to say all these nice things to the reporters, and that's about all you need to know about Alex Ramirez. And I'm not saying he's perfect, but I
No, of
mean,
course not.
you can certainly pattern a lot of what you do about him. He's very professional, and he also shows the human side. So I thought that was really nice. So
Well,
that's why I left it in there.
I think the reporters enjoyed that he gives them real answers. Sometimes he jokes with them, like, during the Tokyo Dome series when he said, you're going to tell me who they're pitching? I'm not going to tell you who I'm pitching. It's top secret. We don't do that stuff. It's screwy, but that's the way it is. Or sometimes he'd say, well, I'm not going to tell you now, but I'll tell you later. I mean, Tatsunori Hara was famous for saying, I don't think I want to reveal my tactics at this time. And sometimes you had the feeling that, not that he didn't have tactics, but he wasn't very confident in his tactics, or he didn't have any rationale for his tactics, or sometimes he just didn't have a clue.
Well, he didn't want to open up that can of worms, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, that's the thing. And with Alex, it's rarely a case of, I'll bet, I'll have to ask my colleagues who cover the BayStars, but I'll bet there were some times during the season he says, I didn't really know which of these guys to use in this case, so I kind of flipped a coin. But I'll bet there are those days when they ask, and that's what his answer is, because that was the real truth. They got a lot of truth, and I think the writers, and I think they responded to that.
All right, well, let's talk about that first stage. Now they beat the Giants 4-3 in 11 innings on Monday, and that was October 10th, and so they advanced in their first CLCS appearance and advanced to the next round. They took an early lead. The Giants came back. The BayStars went up by a run. Shuichi Murata homered to get the Giants even. Blah blah blah. We went to extra innings, and this is when all the fun started because I started talking on Twitter about how the BayStars basically are in a they're down a run right now until they get ahead because they have to be in the lead. And Toshihiko Kuramoto, who failed to get a bunt down in a late game situation, grounded a ball up the middle, and it goes off of Hirokazu Sawamura's foot. And I saw the replay, and at first, when I was looking at it in live action, I thought he tried to kick it first, but it looks like he basically almost got hit just before he was moving his foot, so that was going to hit his foot anyway. And he comes out of the game. And then you've got a reserve player going up against a pitcher that I don't think Yoshinobu Takahashi was planning to use in that situation. That's Tejada. And Mine comes up with a big hit off the wall. I thought he was going to get to second base. I thought he was going to get a big double, but
Yeah,
then I remember
everybody
he's kind of
did.
chunky.
He's chunky, and standing at home plate watching to see if it was going to stay fair or foul, and then giving a good bat flip probably didn't help.
No, yeah, he was not off at that. He was tweaking it there a little bit, but he got that run in, and then the Bay Stars closed it out. I mean, Yamasaki had his troubles earlier in the season, and in this game he had two runners on in the ninth, and he had Shinosuke Abe hit a ball that I thought off the bat was going to go out, but then when you see the replay, it does go off the end of the bat, and it died on the warning track, and the Bay Stars advanced. And so I was really happy for the whole Bay Star crowd. I was happy for Alex and Ramirez, of course. I was happy for the players. I thought it was really good, and you know, I predicted the Giants were going to advance, but we've had four series here in the postseason, and I think I've missed on three of them, so I'm doing really well.
Well, you're not 100% wrong.
It just feels that way.
So that's kind of I think that's kind of a good batting average for you, .250.
You're right. I would probably take that.
I'll repeat what I said before the series. I mean, I think the Bay Stars went in with a manager, and the Giants went in with a guy who's sort of in charge. I don't know, the guy who's the, I don't know, in charge of the committee.
No, he's the spokesman.
Yeah. So
once they make a decision, he just walks up to the mic and says, we've decided to do.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end of the, when they asked, what went wrong with the series, he says, I think he said basically the manager failed the Giants.
Who said that?
Yoshinobu Takahashi. He said, I lacked the strength to do for this team to do a better job. And I think he was right.
But
having said that, he wasn't really planning to be the manager this year.
Well, again, yeah, we joked about the fact that I think somebody woke him up at 6 in the morning and said, hey, they want you down at the office. They're going to make you the manager. And he's like, huh? What? Huh? Who are you? And why'd you get in my house?
What is this nightmare? When did this start? So that was the first stage.
But, yeah, again, I think he didn't have all his guns. Tomoyuki Sugano, their ace, wasn't able to pitch. And, right after they lost, I saw an article that said, we wonder if Sugano is the kind of ace pitcher we can rely on as the Giants pitcher. I mean, there's just all kinds of crazy.
The Giants were, there was some stuff at the end of the season, and they also banished Luis Cruz, who they might have been able to use, but they disciplined him, and so he wasn't available.
Yeah, it was just weird.
It was weird, so it's sort of like they kind of ran out of second baseman there.
Yeah. Well, and then they ran out of a season. So on to the second stage, game one, the Bay Stars versus the Carp will start in the Central League. And it was Chris Johnson on Tuesday night. He blanks the Bay Stars 5-0. Yep. And that was basically it. He was awesome. You just like the ace you need in a postseason situation to carry a team through. He goes 3 hitters, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks on 105 pitches. And, let's go. Let's go to game two. Guillermo Moscoso was okay for DNA. He did, really well.
Yeah.
He 2 runs for him through 6 innings was good, but Rami Khan decided to throw him out there for the 7th inning. And I was, too busy to tweet at that moment, at that instant, but I didn't think that was a good idea. And he ended up giving up additional runs that inning, and they ended up losing. And Kosuke Tanaka started his madman run with 3 hits that night and had 2 doubles, a walk, and an RBI. So they failed to get him out that first game.
The second day, he had a double and a home run.
Yeah,
and a walk.
Yeah, he was a one-man wrecking crew.
2 for 3 with a walk. Yeah.
Right. So game two, 3-0, the Carp. They take a 3-0 series lead because they have that one game advantage. And this was Yusuke Nomura. And this was the guy, the win total said we should be seeing all season because he had so many wins. And I kept saying, Sugano is really pitching a lot better than he is. It's just that the Carp have a really good defense. They've been scoring a lot of runs. The Giants don't score as many runs. They don't have as good a defense, and so Sugano doesn't look as good. But when you look at the pitching and the quality of the pitches and what Sugano was doing, especially early in the season, yeah, this, you know, this guy didn't, couldn't.
Yeah, he was a
match up. Yeah.
No, I'm, yeah, in the beginning of the season, there was a, you know, we discussed this, or I went at some length in the Pitcher of the Month Awards monthly rant, you know, that he was the pitcher who had the, you know, he had the wins, but the bad ERA and, you know, all the runners on base, but he had the wins. You never know, because 1 month in the Pacific League, they chose the guy with, you know, one month in one league, they choose the guy with the ERA, and the next month in the other league, they chose the guy with the wins. So,
right. So he goes six shutout innings, three hits allowed, one walk, four strikeouts, nothing spectacular. He just kept guys off base. You know, he was a, he was a base, you know, he was a running, a runner machine before. He just produced a lot of runners, and he just, you know, took that out of his game on this night. Pitched really well. And then Tanaka, if you remember on last week's show, I said basically that these things in the playoffs, they work out where the top teams actually advance. But sometimes you get the occasional guy you don't expect to. All of a sudden he starts to get hot and he's, you know, leading the team and you can't get him out and all that. I like to call it the Mark Lemke factor, because it's guys you think you can get out and you just never get them out. And I think Tanaka was that in this particular series. And, you know, in the end,
he was that and more. It was amazing.
He just incredible. They were not, they were just having so much trouble getting anything past him. If he was swinging, he was making contact. So anyway, Yoshihiro Maru looked pretty good. He looked like he was ready to explode offensively. He looked very confident with his swings at the plate. And I think you basically the Bay Stars, and they came in with a lot of momentum and they were looking good. They just hit a wall. I mean, they just got out, shut out for the second consecutive game, and it was pretty much ho hum for the Carp. Although you wouldn't think so from the score, but it just seemed like they had the Bay Stars just had no chance of scoring. And you had Imamura and then Jackson and Nakasaki finishing the last three innings, and they were pretty clean. So a nice, neat job by those guys, and a 3-0 lead in the series. Game three, the Stars struck back, though.
They did, and this is, you know, this is the one, oddly enough, this is the one I came in and everybody, when I the instant I got to Mazda Stadium, everybody said, well, today's the last game because it's Kuroda against Eno.
And I
said, look, I love Hiroki Kuroda, but he's too serious. He carries the weight of the world on his shoulders when he doesn't need to. This is the guy who go to the wall before he lets his team down, and he feels that he puts that all on himself. And I've seen it happen where he excruciates over each and every single pitch, and he takes it personally. And it's just so often that just backfires.
Yeah.
The idea of just, you know, pitching comfortably is not something he does. He doesn't go up there and just cruise. He's got to dial everything up mentally. And I thought, you know, I've seen so many big games of his where he just was just a tad too tight. And I thought, no, this is the game the Bay Stars will win. I didn't have any feeling for Eno. I didn't know how good he had been against the Carp this year, but he would have been quite good.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, to me, I think I talked about the fact that Kuroda hadn't looked good at times this season, and I remember comparing him to the former Carp older pitcher, Shinji Sasaoka, when he was a veteran with the Carp. And at the end of his career, and he just looked like every pitch was like carrying a ton of ice up a flight of stairs. I mean, it just looked that way. And then Kuroda has looked that way at times this season to me. And I figured the Bay Stars were going to get one game. I thought they might get game two, and they didn't. So I expected them fully to get this one. But I didn't know that Eno was going to actually... You know, he's a guy who has early inning issues, and he didn't really struggle with that and got through it. And then he was fantastic for them. And then, you know, they had a couple good plays. One,
Takayuki. In the eighth inning.
Kajitani in the eighth inning.
Well, Ishikawa and Kajitani both in the eighth inning.
Yeah, Takehiro Ishikawa had to leave the game because he hurt himself making a play on a foul ball.
And that was the second out. And then
Kajitani comes up with a clutch, you know, foul diving, ball, diving, stab, running
into the wall.
Into the wall and foul territory and down the first base line, and Takahiro Arai is standing because he had hit this ball, and he's standing at the plate thinking he did not catch that.
Yeah, he can't be. Yeah, we want a replay. He was sitting there. He was not leaving the field. In fact, the Carp were not leaving the field easily. They were in disbelief.
And it wasn't because they were worried if Kajitani was okay or not, because he did stay on the ground a long time.
I think they didn't think he caught the ball.
Some of them were worried about Kajitani, and most of them were worried about, wait a second, did he really catch that? Ump, are you calling him out? You know, come on.
Well, the umpire's there. I mean, it's right in front of him. So, and I couldn't, yeah. You can't see that from the press box, so I couldn't tell.
Right.
Not that I have the eyesight to see something, you know, 100 meters away.
Okay, you'll keep that in mind. But as Alex said earlier in the interview, Edian Herrera hit a two-run home run off of Kuroda in the fourth inning, and you know, they tried to hide Ryuhei Matsuyama in left, and he let a ball fall in front of him for a leadoff double by Masayuki Kuwahara, and that ends up being another run. Yeah. And Takayuki Kajitani had a clutch single on that to get that run home. So, I mean, it was a good game for the Bay Stars. I didn't think they had gotten any momentum or anything, but I thought, well, there's their victory that I was pretty sure they were going to get, and then we went to game four.
Okay, we get game four, and I'm gonna hold my water on this. I'll let you go because I'm still, I got too much. I got too much vinegar on this one.
Oh, okay. So it ends up 8-7 for the Carp. They clinched their spot in the Japan Series. Kosuke Tanaka is the MVP. I think they got him out that day. I'm looking.
They did.
It up.
I think at the very end they did.
He finishes the series 10-for-12, 8-33. They struck him out in his last at bat, but he had two singles and two walks that day, so he was pretty much all over the bases. And then Shota Imanaga, the rookie starter for the Bay Stars, got knocked around for six runs in the first inning, and the big blow in that was a three-run home run by Brad Eldred, Big Bad Brad, and he hits a ball to right field. And you and I were talking about it before we actually started taping, and I said, yeah, you were saying that the umpire missed a pitch earlier in the inning, and Imanaga
He missed several pitches. He missed two really bad ones tomorrow, and he hit the worst one in the world to Kosuke Tanaka, which was Tanaka had this great at bat. It was 11 pitches, and the first 10 were masterclass. He was ahead in the count 3-0. And Imanaga battled back, but Tanaka fouled off everything.
Mm-hmm.
He took one called strike to go 3-1. He fouled off, and then he fouled off six straight pitches. And then he got caught looking at a ball right down the middle. And the umpire said, take your base.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like going, huh? The press box was going, huh? What just happened?
What just happened here? Yeah.
So anyway, and then after that, he had an at bat where he couldn't find the Kikuchi was trying to bunt on balls that weren't like within a foot of the plate.
Because he got the bunt sign, so he's got to get it down.
Right. He finally got a pitch close enough to bunt on the third pitch. I don't think it was a strike either. And then Morrow came up, and the umpire missed a couple on I'm not going to say they weren't on the black. They were on the white. And he missed those. And then Morrow walks on a 3-1 count, and then kind of he did recover, and he missed one to Arai. The umpire missed one to Arai. And that kept Arai in the count. But he was struggling at that point. I think Arai had a good at bat. But none of this was helped by the umpire. And after that, after Arai's single, Imanaga really, he didn't lose it visibly. I mean, he was palpitating a bit on the mound. He looked concerned. He looked frustrated.
Right.
But after that, he just started trying to throw, you know, just trying to locate so hard that the pitches had nothing on them.
Yeah, that pitch to Brad Eldred was just, you could see he was aiming it. It was not a terrible pitch, and it was off the plate.
Well, it was out. It was a good swing to hit that pitch, but it was a terrible pitch, but it was reachable for a big guy.
Yeah, especially with those big long arms.
Of course, if you're a foreigner, sometimes that pitch be called a strike. So
you might as well swing. So yeah, I like what Rami Khan said about the whole thing. If they were going to lose, that was, you know, that at least they had some pride in that, because they were down by 6 runs after after an inning, and they could have given up and just kind of gone through the motions, and they didn't. They came right back, and Kajitani hits a home run, and then later J-Lo hits a home run, and they got 3 runs. I'm sorry, they got some runs in the 6th inning. So they came back, and they, you know, they really made it a game. And even in the 9th inning, I think Jose Lopez, I call him J-Lo, hit a ball down the left field line that he was just out in front of. If he wasn't, that would have been trouble. But he ends up working a walk, and then Tsutsugo strikes out to end the season for the Bay Stars. But it was a great season. They had a great run. They did really well in the playoffs. I think they needed a little bit more. They got a bunch of those young pitchers some experience. Obviously, they went out and got Jamie Romack, and I think they expected a little bit more. And that, I think that's the kind of guy they were missing. If that guy had materialized or had become the person they or the player they envisioned, he would have been the perfect guy to hit behind Tsutsugo and maybe protect him a little, like Rami Khan was saying in the interview, and they might have had something different. So maybe that's the kind of player they go out and get.
Well, I'm gonna disagree with. Well, I think in this case, in this instance, I think he's right about Tsutsugo. He lost his plate discipline against the Carp that he had against the Giants, but normally he's the kind of hitter who basically he can control his pitch selection. You know, he basically, you know, he forces the pitchers to throw strikes or walk him. He doesn't swing at that stuff. This time it would have helped if there was somebody behind him, but normally he's not the guy who's going to be really helped by having a big number five hitter. Now the guy who's going to be really helped by having a big number five hitter is a guy who won't take a walk, and you know, that kind of hitter, like like a certain manager a certain manager who had 2,000 hits in Japan. Guy wouldn't walk very much. Now he's the kind of guy who would benefit from having a big hitter behind him, because it would mean more strikes to swing at. But Tsutsugo's not really normally that hitter, so I will have to disagree with Alex in that respect. But,
well, I'll tell him you said that.
You can't. I'll tell him I said that. I got no problem with that. I mean, you know, it doesn't really matter to be honest. I mean,
I actually think he's an occasional listener to the show, so I think he'll be calling you soon. So,
oh well, he will. I mean, but I'm just saying this is, you know, the famous I'm not going to take in all the, if I cited all the actual evidence for that, you know, the show would go on for 5 or 6 hours.
All right, well, let's not do that.
Let's not do that. So
let's make a seamless transition to the PLCS and talk about the Fighters and the Hawks. So the series obviously ended today, which is good, because this I don't remember us. This is our 6th year, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't remember us being able to talk about the Japan series like this before it started, but one other time, and I don't even remember when that was. It was so long ago, because we always end up with these series that go really long. One of the teams we know and one of the teams we don't know, and so we're making picks in the dark sometimes in terms of trying to guess. So this time we don't have to do that.
Okay, we can make our picks in the light.
In the light. So game one on Wednesday, the Fighters and the Hawks, and the Fighters win 6-0 to go up 2-0 in their series. Shohei Ohtani throws a gem, and I read somewhere he was the first player in Pacific League history to start a game as the pitcher and have his team forego the DH.
In the postseason.
In the postseason.
Right. That would make sense. The only time we ever saw that, the only time we've seen that regularly in the Pacific League has been at the end of the year, when teams having clinched the Japan series before the Pacific League playoffs began would use their pitchers to bat, would have their pitchers bat in games to give them some time looking at live pitching. But having him actually bat in games, you know, in meaningful games, was different. That was new.
Okay. So again, he was dealing on the mound, certainly not like he was in the finale, but he was dealing 7 innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, only 6 strikeouts. He gets the win. Chris Martin comes in the 9th, strikes everything out that he sees, and it's game over. And it was a really nice start for them at Sapporo Dome.
That was Chris Martin's first game since September 5th.
Yeah, he had not pitched in a while, and he just looked dominant in his inning. And you thought, oh, this is gonna be another fighter's thing. And of course, I picked the Hawks to get through this series. So I'm like, hey, wait a second, man. You know, you guys can't be looking this good. I didn't pick you to win. But Sho Nakata goes deep, and I don't know. I kind of got the idea because it didn't look like Shota Takeda of the Hawks was looking that good.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought that Kudo waited a little bit too long. I mean, it's a playoff situation. You've got to act fast. And I just thought he waited a little bit too long. And then they had the bad inning in the 5th. Yeah, 6-run inning. Takeda he gives up this massive home run. It didn't even, I mean, it, as soon as it was hit, it was out. We all knew it. So I think this was his downfall, Kudo, because that seemed to be a theme for him in games that they lost. Him leaving pitchers in there too long, in my opinion. In my opinion, I want to stress that. But
John, we just assume it's your opinion. I don't think you have to say it.
I don't borrow anybody's opinion.
Can I have that and then put it on the ground and stomp on it?
Right? Yeah. Excuse me. I need that. Yeah, that thing's broken. We got to get that fixed before you hurt somebody.
Many times I've said that to you. Oh my gosh. God, I can't count.
Ohtani was having a good game. I actually recorded his first career bunt sacrifice.
Right. That was interesting.
I think that was just for you, Jim. I think, Hideki Kuriyama, the skipper, has heard the show. And he heard the last show in particular. And I think he just wanted to make a sacrifice just for you.
His English ain't that good. But no, I think that was a case of, what can Ohtani do that will keep him from having to run the bases? He could strike out or he could sacrifice. They didn't want him to run the bases. That was it.
Yeah. Well, whatever they wanted to do. That was in the 6th inning. He lays down a bunt and a sacrifice. So he got the job done. So I think, I was thinking this is going to be something we might see later on, either later on this series or the next series, something to look out for, having Ohtani bunt. But that's kind of a waste. I remember Jason Koskrie tweeting something about making him bunt, but I don't remember what it was, but it was funny. So they cruise, they win. We go to game 2. This was the game that was kind of a shocker for the Fighters, I think. It ends up being 6-4 for the Hawks. They rally off of closer Chris Martin and get three runs in the 9th inning, and they pretty much shock most of the Sapporo Dome Fighter fans, I think. And obviously, Tsuyoshi Wada was injured. He had an elbow problem, from what I read.
Correct. He was having a discomfort. He had discomfort in his left elbow at the end of the season.
Right. And so they had to turn to a guy who's pretty reliable in terms of giving you a decent start in the postseason. That's Kenichi Nakata. Mm-hmm. And, he did all right. He wasn't bad. I just don't know what you're expecting from him again. For me, I think if he gives me 5 good innings in a postseason situation, I think I'll take that. And of course, the Hawks have been having their issues with the bullpen as well. So who do you go to and when? I think that's a big decision, or it was a big decision for him. But anyway, Nakata, 5 2/3 innings, and he ends up allowing 4 runs. But I think, if they get him out of there earlier and don't give up those 2 runs in the 6th inning, maybe it's a little bit easier winning path. I just didn't like the decision to leave him out there that long. I'm thinking, look, you got 5 good innings out of a guy you didn't really get that much out of in the regular season. Why are you putting him out there longer in a playoff situation?
Yeah, that is a good question. And actually, my question with Nakata was, this is a guy who pitched really well against the Marines. And I was thinking, Well, why don't we use him against the Marines?
Why is he out there against the fighters?
Exactly.
So, lots of stuff went on in that ninth inning for the comeback, and those things happen, and it was really clutch hitting for the Hawks. And I just think the one good thing that Kudo did do was he put on this double steal with one out and two on in the ninth inning when he was down a run. And boy, was I just, I tweeted it immediately. Man, you've got to have some onions to pull that one off. And that was pretty spectacular.
Now, here's the thing, too. And I don't know if I mentioned this or I wrote about it, was that the Hawks, they're a good base stealing team. Both of these teams are good base stealing team, but the Hawks really had trouble stealing bases against the Fighters all year.
Mm.
And that's extra. You get extra credit for doing that when you had this really bad record against him. Although with Chris Martin, that's another issue.
Yeah, he is kind of long and lanky and takes a long time to unwind and all that stuff.
And he doesn't have base runners on anyway, so it's probably doesn't have any experience. He probably doesn't remember he had a slide step.
Yeah, and the lead runner was Shuhei Fukuda, who's pretty speedy. And
he'd already stolen second base in that inning, so...
Right, and so what I thought was interesting in that whole sequence was Yuichi Honda was at the plate, and he had a talk with the third base coach during that at-bat to make sure they knew what was going on, make sure they didn't get any signs crossed, and he basically kind of let those guys steal the base, and then he chops at a ball and hits it the opposite way into left field to score them both. So they got even, and then Yuki Yanagita hit the go-ahead run in, but... Yeah, I thought that was, that right there was the Kudo I had expected. That's probably something I would have expected from former manager Koji Akiyama, because he manages like the devil when he's in the playoffs. Anything, the worst possible thing you can imagine happening, he brings it out, whether it's a batter, whether it's a pitcher, whether it's a starter bringing him in as a reliever, a day after the guy pitched or whatever it is, he's out there to cut your throat, and not even take your name, so that was a great move. I liked it. And then it looked like the Hawks were going to get some traction a little bit. And here comes game three, and Brandon Laird, he hits a 3-run shot in the first inning. And then Kohei Arihara comes up with something I didn't think he was going to do, because I didn't like the way he had been throwing a lot late in the season, but he gives the Fighters 7 innings of one-run ball and, 5 hits, no walks, 7 Ks, and they end up winning this game 4-1. And, I thought the Hawks were going to get some, like I said, some traction, get some momentum, and they just couldn't with this game. Kodai Senga again gives up a home run in the first inning. He had done that before in their first round. Obviously, it's another case where the manager gets everybody ready and then they don't perform. But then, late in the game, when we expect Chris Martin, who had thrown... Well, maybe we didn't expect him. I was thinking maybe they would give him another chance to come back out there and make up for the previous game, but that would have been 3 games in a row.
Right.
So, out comes Anthony Bass in the ninth, and he had to work out of trouble, and he made some good pitches, and they escaped. So... obviously Chris Martin not being used was a surprise, and like I said, coming off the injury, you can't underestimate or overestimate what his condition might have been. And then the next day they took him off the roster.
So I'm guessing his ankle might be an issue still.
I don't know, but
so Martin was gone. Yeah, that was a surprise. And now Anthony Bass, who, and I have to swear, and Anthony Bass has just been there kind of in the shadows. They used him as a starter ineffectively. I mentioned this,
when he was on the show two, three weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, the guy who could start and relieve, and he was the reliever who could start if you needed a body. he was effective in relief, and all of a sudden he's more than effective in relief.
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty good. So, then we go to game 4. The Hawks win that one. They get 3 home runs. They win 5-2. Nobuhiro Matsuda, Yuya Hasegawa, and Kenta Imamiya all go deep, and you know, very nice. I wasn't sure what the Hirotoshi Takanashi was going to be in the postseason. I think I remember bringing that up at one point when you were talking about raving about him, and he and the other rookie Takayuki Kato.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a rookie, you know, and that kind of thing happens, and he wasn't all that good. He wasn't bad. He wasn't horrible, but
right.
These are the kinds of things that happen. And even though the Hawks were a second-place team, I was thinking, okay, well, you know, there's a difference between these two teams, and the difference is this one's more experienced and knows what to expect in the playoff situation, blah, blah, blah. The Hawks are going to come back. They're going to make my pick look right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Game 5 today on Sunday. What a game. Now, you're saying that you didn't see much of this game.
No, I apologize for that. I was at the airport waiting to talk to a contact. And so I saw bits and pieces of Game 5.
No problem. No problem. I was all over it, man. It was...
Well, I know you would be. I mean, I did... did have it on my TV while I was on my computer while I was waiting, but right, I only saw like one inning.
Yeah, well, what a player, what a game, what a run, what a stud, what a star. Shohei Ohtani. The Fighters fell behind 4 runs in the first inning, but they end up winning 7-4. Gosh, where do we even start? I'm going to start at the end because it was just amazing. I've been asking this. I've been hoping for this. I've been talking about it, or I talked about it years ago when Shohei Ohtani became this two-way star. I said, you know what I want to see? I want to see him either play in the field or be in the DH and then coming in and closing out a game.
Well, you thought you had a feeling that was the ideal role for him. Am I wrong?
Ideal, I don't know, but I was thinking, yeah, because once you're out there running around, you're already loosened up in that respect. If you go and throw, I don't know, whatever it takes you to get warmed up in a bullpen before your bat at bat turns, it comes up in the turn. I don't know. I mean, it's a professional level. I'm not going to say you can do what guys did in college. I remember Mark Kotze, a guy who went to my school, Cal State Fullerton. And they used
remember
him as
the Titans.
And thank you. And I remember they used him as the closer, and he would be standing out in center field, and they'd go to him and make pitching changes, and they'd bring him in from center field, and he'd just get his 8 warm-up tosses, and then he'd start firing BBs. I don't think you could do that in the pro ranks, but and obviously Ohtani got ready today. He was the DH, so he had time to get ready when he wasn't playing in the field. So even when they went out to the field, he could be throwing in the bullpen if indeed they wanted that to happen. So closer, yes, I think I did mention that. I had a lot of crazy ideas. Whatever I said 4 years ago or 3.5 years ago, whatever, it all came to fruition today. It was beautiful. He
oh,
comes out.
Great. I'm so happy for you, John.
My life is no better or no worse.
Excuse me.
I'll just have a little bit sweeter dreams tonight. But what he did, he came on and he was just firing unlawful projectiles at some of these poor helpless batters. He broke his own NPB record, previously 164 kilometers per hour, and he hit 165 3 times, so that's 102 on the gun to you and me. And he slammed the door in the ninth inning, 2 strikeouts and a really weak ground ball on the infield to end it. Just fantastic. He had an infield hit and ended up scoring on a run or one of the 2 runs that helped pad the lead later in the game. He wasn't so much a factor on the offensive side, but boy, you know, I was listening on I was watching NHK and I was listening to my, Paulig TV broadcast, mm-hmm. and they started to speculate in the seventh inning, hey, do you think Ohtani is going to close this game out? Because we had seen Martin, we knew that he was taken off the roster. Bass had already thrown 4 innings, and he was a real unsung hero in this game because remember I told you he's a scrappy pitcher.
Bass was the man.
Yeah, throwing 4 scoreless innings right out of the gate after. And this was the other thing I liked about Hideki Kuriyama. He saw, you know, Kato didn't have a good first inning, obviously. He said, I'm not waiting around for you to right your ship. You know, you go throw a bullpen if you want to, but you're out of this game. And getting Bass out there right away and show Nakata hitting a home run early on, you know, to tell just an answer back to get on the board. I think those were big.
Yeah, I mean, the Hawks did solve Bass the second time through their, you know, his second time through their order, but he got out of that inning. And then, okay, thanks, Anthony, you've done your job, you saved the game, you know, it's too late. It was, they got to him too late. He kept them at bay for longer than he needed to.
Yeah, now another thing, now here's the curious theme that I've been talking about with Kudo, and obviously, you know, Tadashi Setsu hasn't been pitching very effectively the whole year because he hasn't even really been on the first team that much. And Setsu only threw three innings, and, you know, I didn't like the way he looked in the second inning. But, you know, he only gave up two runs in three innings, so he wasn't out there that long. But, you know, this is a do-or-die game for the Hawks. They've got to win, or they don't get to continue playing. So the decision to go with Nao Higashihama and let him get into trouble and then not go out there and pull him, and he ends up giving up this big double and three runs in a third of an inning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, still he doesn't go and get someone like Suarez or somebody at least is a little bit more of a late inning guy, because I think he wants to save those guys. And I'm like, you can't save these guys. You got to keep this game where it is right now, where you can get a hanging something or a wayward fastball and tie the score at least, because you got to win this game. And he didn't. And so for me, I just thought, look, you berated me for saying that Kudo had a lot of talent and I didn't think he was doing very much. And a lot of times he was. He was taking a Ferrari, and when the Ferrari wasn't working right, he put the Lamborghini in. And when the Lamborghini wasn't running very well, he put the Porsche in. And this year, I think we saw a lot of injuries, and it just kind of took a toll on the team, especially in the second half. And he needed to work harder with his little, you know, Volkswagens and other things to get this team through. And I don't think he did it very well in the postseason. He admitted it. He said after the game, he said, "Look, I had some mistakes in the uses of players, and I will I'll learn from it, and I'll come back and do better next year."
Yeah, well, I won't disagree with that. And I think, one of the big mistakes, probably the biggest mistake that he made this season was Lee Deho going to the majors.
They were highly competitive, and they had an 11.5 game lead more injuries than it was.
They missed a guy with a .400 on base percentage. You bet they did.
I'm not saying that they didn't miss him. I don't think they needed him to win this series. I think they needed.
No, they didn't need him to win the series, but they needed him to finish first.
That's probably true. But again, you know, they had injuries. They did have a lot of injuries, and when they had the areas they had injuries, Lee wasn't going to be able to help them. They had pitchers who weren't pitching well and didn't perform. And, you know, he might have been able to hit and win him a couple extra games here, but
well, that's the difference. I think that might have been that was a difference. The issue, you know, it wasn't going to help him win this game, but you know, having the extra bat, you know, having him, he's a different. You know, he was a difference, and it's not so much the 20 home runs, but you know, the 400 on base percentage and so on and so forth. And it was a huge loss for them offensively. I mean, it's not a huge loss because they've got so many guys who can go in, but none of them are as good as a DH as he is. So, okay. I'm not going to disagree with you about Kudo's handling of the series. And I think he did make mistakes, and obviously that's something he's going to have to learn from. Also, I think the comparison with Akiyama is a little unfair, considering by the time you saw Akiyama as the postseason manager, he was in his like fourth year.
Yeah, sure. Right. I understand. I'm just talking about, I mean, we've, yes, I agree.
Okay. He's
a second year guy. This is not his first dance.
No, you know, in his first 2 years, he was pretty terrible. So And there were other issues with Akiyama. I mean, the Hawks had different issues with Akiyama, so which I've pointed out. So, yeah, can he learn from that? Yes. Does he have more things to learn? Yes. But there are advantages to having Kudo, and I'll stick with that. I think the Hawks' injuries were different kinds of injuries. You know, they're the same kinds of injuries they had the first year, which is the guys getting hurt, you know, rolling their ankles on bases and getting slammed and so on and so forth. You know, typical baseball accidents, not things that are caused by being out of shape or being overworked or overused, which were the Akiyama kind of injuries that they suffered from.
Right. Okay. Well, so we've got the Nippon Ham Fighters mm-hmm. against the Hiroshima Carp,
the two league champions,
in the Japan Series, which starts Saturday. So obviously, I'm going to predict wrong on this one too. And this one's another one that's going to be close. I think it's going to be really close.
It is, and it's really hard to tell because, you know, by all intents and purposes, I mean, if you looked at their records, the Carp had a better record. You know, they scored more runs than anybody. But they also scored more runs in the Central League. They're a Central Right. League team, and you really have to take that into account because the level of competition is not the same. You know,
Right.
you've got Jay Jackson he throws some pretty good heat at the end of the bullpen, at the back of the Carp bullpen. But you see, these guys, there are more guys like him in the Pacific League.
Right.
These guys are used to seeing that. That's what the Central League managers tell me, that, you know, that's the difference. And I think Dennis Sarfate said the same. And it is a little, the Pacific League hitters are used to hitting faster pitchers.
Okay.
So it's really hard to say how these things are going to go. With that in mind, you know, I think it bears pointing out, and this is just sort of a historical trivia thing, you know, that since 2002, the Central League, you know, how many Japan Series have they won? They won 2007, they won 2009, they won 2012. So three times in the last 13 Japan Series. Which team lost all those Japan Series?
The Giants and the Dragons.
No. I mean, which Pacific League team lost those three? 2007.
2007, the Fighters lost.
That's right. 2009.
2009, the Fighters lost to the Giants.
2012.
Blank.
The Fighters lost to the Giants.
Oh,
the only
okay.
Pacific League team that ever loses the Japan Series is the Fighters. So we have an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a lot of subplots. I think you've got Ohtani saying, welcome to the world, you know, here I am to the world and to MLB. I think, you know, they do pay attention. Even ESPN pays attention when the Japan Series highlights are available.
Oh, do they?
I think you've got Kuroda, who could be, you know, if they do win, if the Carp win, I could see him saying sayonara and going out on top.
I think he's going to say sayonara regardless whether they win or not.
But... Well, I think he should, but yeah. I think you got the title-starved Carp fans
sure.
versus the entitled Fighters fans who figure, you know, we're going to be the favorites and no stinky little CL Central League team can beat us. We're the tougher league. We've got Ohtani. I think that's that kind of dynamic is working. And I think you got, you know, except for maybe the Hanshin fans, some bitter Hanshin fans, I think a lot of the people in the southern part of the country are going to be rooting for the Carp.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be rooting for the Carp. They were certainly, you know, there was when the end of the year attendance figures come out, you know, one of the themes is, oh yes, the Tigers led all teams in attendance this year, or the Giants led all teams in attendance, and the reason for that is they got big stadiums.
Right.
Now,
huge, yeah.
And so if you ask the question, which team increased their opponent's attendance the most?
It would have been the Fighters, especially when Ohtani was pitching.
No, I'm not talking about when Ohtani was pitching. Which team increased their opponent's attendance the most? The answer is the Hiroshima Carp.
Hmm.
So They were the used to be the Tigers were the best road team in Japan. Right now it's the Carp.
All right, and the Carp, I also think the matchup is good because they have built-in DHs on their roster.
Yep.
Yuhei Matsuyama is one. I like Brad Eldred at first base, and if Takahiro Arai is the DH, then I'm fine with that either way.
I like Arai at first base.
Either one.
Arai's pretty good. I'll tell you, he has a real good ability. I mean, he's guilty of sometimes forgetting what he's doing out there, but
I the defense, the pitching, everything is really close. I'm just gonna say, hey, I like the Central League. I think it's gonna be a real fall classic, and I'm gonna go with the Carp in six.
I'm good with that. I'm flipping a coin. To think. I like both of these teams play really good defense. The Fighters actually might have the best defensive team in Japan.
Yeah, they're going to be better in some positions. I think all around they're better, but up
the other
middle,
thing is
I'm
they don't,
sure the Carp are better.
Well, the other thing is they don't play on natural turf as much.
Yeah.
And the Carp are going to have that in three games, in the first two games. And I think that's going to help them because they're just not as used to that.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go with the Carp, and I think six is probably accurate.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. The question is from Bill Covey Bly. I hope I'm saying that right, and he says, "What's the reasoning behind MPB starting the Climax series with the lower seed team down a win?"
Okay. That's a good question because the Climax series was based on the Pacific League playoffs.
Right.
And the Pacific League playoffs, there was a one win advantage if depending on the season's results. If you finished a certain number of games ahead of the second place team, you got a one win advantage, but the Daiei Hawks never got it because they were never able to build finish the season with a big enough lead.
Right.
And they lost every final stage.
Right.
And it got really frustrating. And when the Central League had it, they had to make sure that didn't happen. So we can't have the league champion losing every year, which is what the Hawks did. 2004, 2005, and then so 2006, the Pacific League changed the rule to give the one automatic one win advantage, and at that point it was a best of five.
Mm-hmm.
It was and the Hawks were the Hawks won a series, the first stage that year, and they went to Sapporo and they got swept in two games because of the first time the one win advantage it went to the Fighters.
Right.
So anyway, they had that, and then the first year of the Central League adopted the Climax series and renamed it so it wouldn't be like anything the Pacific League did. Because
it's their idea.
That's right, because it was the Central League's idea, of course, to have the Climax series, not the people who'd actually been doing it. The visiting team needed to win three games. The home team needed to win two, and that format lasted for 1 year because the Giants got swept in three games by the Chunichi Dragons. So the next year says, oh, that's not fair. We have to make this longer.
Right.
So they haven't changed it after the Giants. They didn't change it after the Giants got swept in 2014, but I'm sure they're working on it.
Yeah, they're thinking of something. So that's that's how that came about, guys. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the question. Anyone else with questions, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can tweet us at #HighHeat, at JBW Podcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy your baseball.